I'm reading from Isaiah 40, verses 27 and 28, and I'm reading from the New Living Translation. O Jacob, how can you say the Lord does not see your troubles? O Israel, how can you say God ignores your rights? Have you never heard? Have you never understood? The Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of all the earth. He never grows weak or weary. No one can measure the depths of his understanding.
Every elementary school has its share of characters. And author Jen Wilkin is no different as she went to elementary school. She says, the most annoying girl in my first grade class had pigtails and knobby knees and a serious self-control problem when it came to answering questions. She would lean forward, flaying her arms to catch the teacher's attention before anyone else. And if our teacher, Mrs. Walker, called on a different student, Miss Pigtails would stretch out as far out of her seat as she could and whispering, under her breath, hoping the first respondent would go down in flames. Called on at last, she would blurt out her answer with the force of a tire blowout. She was a know-it-all and a, you could finish it with me, smarty pants. Remember that phrase? And she was me. At last, Mrs. Walker pulled me aside and asked, "Doesn't it feel just great to be able to say the right answer?" Let's allow some other students, other children, a chance to feel that wonderful feeling of answering the right answer, okay? You can tell this author of this book, none like him. It left an impression. Who is the smartest person that you have ever known? God is not merely knowledgeable, he is omniscient, limitless in his knowing. He knows all things, not because he has learned them, but because he is their origin. God does not learn the way that we learn. God knows all things, past, present, and future, as well as all things existed outside of time. He never forgets because he is everything fully present. A.W. Tozier gives us some lyrical attempt at capturing the depth of the knowledge of God. He knows instantly and effortlessly all matter and all matters, all mind and every mind, all spirit and all spirits, all being and every beings, all creaturehood and all creatures, every plurality and all pluralities, and all law and every law, all relations, all causes, all thoughts, all mysteries, all enigmas, all feeling, all desires, every unutterable secret, all thrones and dominions, all personalities, all things visible and invisible in heaven and in earth, motion, space, time, life, death, good, evil, heaven, hell. Because God knows all things perfectly, he knows no thing better than any other thing, but all things equally well. He never discovers anything. He is never surprised, never amazed. He never wonders about anything, nor except when drawing men out for their own good. Does he seek information or ask questions? We never stop learning. You're never too old to learn. Even when you're old enough to know how profound the statement is when the brain becomes forgetful, doing or reading or hearing it again for the first time. To be human is to learn. To deny human learning is to set up ourselves as God. Think of the information age that we are in, where we're testing the limits of our consumption in a way that previous generations have not. An all-you-can-eat buffet to everyone who is genuinely inquisitive to the simply bored. We are bellying up to the buffet line as though our brains have room for and use for whatever we feed them. As with all buffets, though wonderful in their accessibility and variety, and thoughtless consumption can lead to health problems. There is a difference between healthy learning and information gluttony. One is about being fully human, and the other is about craving limitlessness. Our insatiable desire for information is a clear sign that we covet the divine omniscience. We want all the facts, but as finite beings, we are not designed to have them. the teen depressive effects of too much social information, especially on females, has led to a sharp rise in self-injury, such as through cutting. This has risen right about the same time of the use of smartphones. The timing is very suspicious, says Jean Twenge in her book, iGen, and that stands for the current new generation that didn't know life before a smartphone, iGen generation. And she says that with twice as many young teens killing themselves, something clearly needs to be done. Psychologists have coined a term to describe what happens when we ignore good boundaries for what we feed our brains. Information overload. That overload. Studies show that information overload causes irritability, anger, lethargy, listlessness, and sleeplessness. It can cause elevated blood pressure, cardiovascular stress, digestive disorders, headaches, stomach pain, muscle pain, and vision problems. It affects our cognition and thereby our productivity, shortening our attention spans and diminishing our ability to concentrate. Information overload also has another devastating effect. It kills empathy. So, believers are wise to observe God's good boundaries for how much information we can process and how much time it takes to process it in ways that will result in action and empathy. This is not a new addiction. An unhealthy desire for knowledge as a solution to our dissonance happened in the Garden of Eden. Remember? The adversary has a great talented way of bringing about dissonance, doesn't he? Even back in the Garden of Eden. And the author of Ecclesiastes, writing 3,000 years ago, he said, "Making of many books to no end. Much study is a weariness to the flesh." Ecclesiastes 12:12. We are all tempted to believe that the tree of the knowledge of good and evil should be ours, nursing that belief that all knowledge should belong to us. And the suspicion that God is holding out on us, the desire to know what he knows, the hunger to be like him. There are three ways of leaning on our all-knowing God. First of all, number one, let God be the one who manages all knowledge. Only he is capable, and only he can be trusted with perfect wisdom. Our comfort lies not in holding all knowledge, but in trusting the one who does. Number two, you cannot bargain with God or fool him. All acting from the smallest posturing to the greatest pretense is obvious to him, to God, and we are all bad actors. The cross effectively removes our need to overplay our strengths or our weaknesses. I was looking at Psalm 139, if you'd like to open the Bible that you have available to you. Psalm 139 highlights point number two. You cannot bargain with God or fool him. Notice what it says. David's comments here, and I can still hear someone reading this on KLRF. O Lord, you have examined my heart and know everything about me. You know when I sit down or stand up. You know my thoughts even when I'm far away. You see me when I travel and when I rest at home. You know everything I do. Number three, of leaning on that all-knowing, omniscient God. You cannot rely on God to forget. Nor should you want him to forget. It means we can trust his covenant. He will never forget us. And that passage is Isaiah chapter 49. Isaiah chapter 49. And it's in the context of some in the Jerusalem environment saying, Lord, it really looks like you've forgotten us. Notice, and that's in verse 14. Lord has deserted us. The Lord has deserted us. Notice 15. Never, God says, can a mother forget her nursing child? Can she feel no love for the child she has born? But even if that were possible, I would not forget you. See, I have written your name on the palms of my hands. That's close, isn't it? I can never forget you. Because God holds all knowledge, we don't have to. The reason we are here at Yuma Pine is to carry out the business of every believer, is to strive to understand what God has revealed for us to know. And this season, when I was pondering this thought that I'm sharing with you, it is the time to meditate on God's revelation, on the Word becoming flesh. Notice how the Desar of Ages describes this season's knowledge in that first chapter of that famous book on Jesus. Since Jesus came to dwell with us, we know that God is acquainted with our trials, and he sympathizes with our griefs. Every son and daughter of Adam may understand that our Creator is the friend of sinners. For in every doctrine of grace, every promise of joy, every deed of love, every divine attraction presented in the Savior's life on earth, we see God with us. And that's the poetry of these hymns, testifying to that God with us.
Thank you. When you think of Christmas, what's the first image that pops into your mind? A snow-covered landscape or houses that have festive lights and plastic snowmen and candy canes and Santas? Or maybe it's a living room that has a beautiful tree with piles of presents of all sorts and sizes around it. Or maybe it's the, oh no, stress of cooking and the whole family's coming. I'm just so busy, I don't know how to survive. Or maybe you're one of those who, when you go shopping, you're participating in the online game of how far can I get into the season without hearing the little drummer boy? You got to be careful. It might be in the store, or it might be in some kids program, or you may hear it in the elevator, wherever. Well, it's sad to say, but that's kind of the image that most of us think of when we think about Christmas, at least if we live in the developed world, which we do. The first Christmas, of course, was much less dramatic. Well, at least it was dramatically less complicated, for us anyway, who look back at it. It was frigid, smelly, broken down barn, dirty barn animals, and a feed box with a newborn baby. While they were there, the time came for her baby to be born, and she gave birth to her firstborn, a son. She wrapped him in cloths and placed him in a manger because there was no guest room available for them. Well, can't get more simple than that. Nor did the simplicity of Jesus' life end right there. He was born in simplicity, but he was also born into simplicity. He lived in Nazareth, a village that was on the other side of the tracks. And as he grew up, his job was that of a carpenter. It's not like Bill or Troy that are very highly specialized and skilled. They were looked down upon if they were working with their hands. They were not scholars. They were not rabbis in the same sense. And during his public ministry, he admitted that he never had a place that he could call home. Well, most of us are familiar with this vision of Jesus' birth and life also. Now, some of us may have mucked out barns. I have. We may have lived on the wrong side of the tracks. We may have been homeless on a road trip, or you end up with the last motel, which is kind of a dive. We may have had a humble occupation. But I think it's time for a very quick refresher course on what the incarnation really meant, not for us, but to Jesus. God is infinite. He's unbound by any limits. What's the first thing that happened to you when you were born? You were weighed and measured 7 pounds, 11 ounces, 21 inches long, or whatever it was. And that's the first legal evidence that we all have that we are not God. We begin perceiving our own limits as we grow up. And we try to transcend them by figuring out and quantifying the world. What do we know? How much can we measure? Can we see into microscopes? Can we see outer space? But God, he's immeasurable. Can you find out the deep things of God? Can you find out the limits of the Almighty? He's higher than heaven. What can you do? He's deeper than Sheol. What can you know? The measure is longer than the earth and it's broader than the sea. And because God is limitless, it also affects his knowledge, his knowability. We can't know everything about God. We also struggle with being creative. Our creativity comes from rearranging things that God already created, using it to solve problems that we may have. God is self-sufficient. We're not. God is eternal. He's not bound by time. We are. Just in October, I was with my three-year-old granddaughter. She was trying to figure out, but you said yesterday, but yesterday was Monday. And on Monday you said, but yesterday was Sunday. That doesn't make any sense. We try to figure out things like time. What would it be like to live for eternity?